Hey, good morning. This is Jamie with Stonemaier Games, and I'm here for my weekly live cast. Today is June 17th. I'm actually on time today, right at 10 a.m. St. Louis time, where I'll be joining you for the next hour to discuss random topics, to answer any of your questions that you have, and hopefully I can see them in the comments. Yeah, there we go. I can see them in the comments. And to share some Stonemaier Games news, some stuff that we're working on at Stonemaier Games right now. How should we start off with the day? So I'll start with, off with like just a little fun topic. We had a interesting. So we've been very good about self-isolation, and we've started to very carefully venture out a little bit. And so we've had a few little adventures over the last couple days, and we also have a little adventure happening tomorrow. I see Tony, Tom, and Mackenzie joining me. Good morning today. So one of the little things we did is that we had a socially distanced gathering in a friend's backyard. I think there were seven of us, and we sat around a little campfire, and we tried not to touch anything that each other were touching. We didn't wear masks, but we were outside, and we were all 6 feet or more apart. We didn't hug or anything like that, like friends usually do. So we were very careful, and I think we were responsible about it. And it was really nice to see friends in that way. And it was a beautiful evening last, I think it was last Saturday or Sunday in St. Louis, last Sunday. And then last night we were invited, Megan and I were invited to the soft opening of a new restaurant in St. Louis called Chicken Out, which is, as far as I can tell, it's kind of a fast casual fried chicken restaurant. Neither of us eat chicken, but they do have a faux chicken sandwich on the menu. And so we went to this soft opening, and it's been a long time since I've been to a soft opening. I think I've only been to one other one. And it's basically like you show up and they give you some free food. Like you order whatever you want on the menu, you get some free food, you enjoy it, and then hopefully you talk about it afterward. And so I wanted to recommend the Chicken Out experience. I don't know exactly when their real opening is happening, but I think it'll be very soon. But if you're in St. Louis, I would recommend the faux chicken sandwich. The fries were exceptional. They had a really nice spice on them, and the mac and cheese was really good as well. And we had milkshakes. The milkshakes were delicious too. And we wore masks throughout that. We had to go inside, so we definitely wore masks. And went through that. And the last thing that we're doing is I have not been able to play test in person with Joe or Alan. Joe is my coworker. Alan is a part-time coworker, my co-founder. I haven't been able to play test with him in person for a long time, but Joe has been really, really good about social distancing and self-isolation, as I think we have. And so Joe is going to come over to my home office tomorrow, and we're going to have a play test. We're going to wear masks. We're going to kind of isolate the things that we touch so we can just touch those things, the things on the table, the pieces on the table, and then wash our hands afterward. I think it'll be fine. But it is such a weird world that we have to be so careful about this. But I want to continue to be really careful because coronavirus is over 8 million cases worldwide right now. That's ridiculous, and the number is only going to grow unless we're responsible about it. Anyway, I've been rambling a little bit, so let me jump over and see if there's any questions in the comments. Let's see. Carlos says that last weekend he was finally able to play Rolling Realms with his family, and they had a great time. He says he hopes that we decide to create a boxed version. And it wasn't the intention behind Rolling Realms. I'm glad you had fun playing it. It is something that we'll consider if we can make it in a way that is fun and appealing and inexpensive, because I think people can just download one page off the internet. Why buy it? But it is something that we'll look into. Especially if other people are interested in it. In fact, I might do a poll on our next e-newsletter to see if people want us to make it. Aki says, in what time period is viticulture placed at? It is, I believe, early 1900s in Italy. I don't know the exact date. I think it's in the rule book, but it's like, early 1900s. Oregon says, what are some great approaches to mitigate first mover advantage or first, I guess first player advantage sometimes in games? It can sometimes be the whole game or the full round. Oregon mentions three here. He says stunted first turns like an innovation. And I just played Star Realms last night. Star Realms has something like this, where the first player only gets three cards in their opening hand, the other player gets five cards, and from then on, all players get five cards, so draw up to five cards. So that's one way to do it, especially if it's in a game where there's a race element, like the first player to reach something or to have zero health loses, something like that. Oregon also mentions diversify the turn order. Oregon mentions a video where I talked about that. And piece placement to accommodate first mover advantage. So depending on like opening setup, what happens there. I will say that I am always hesitant to put something like this in a game, even though some of my games do have slight elements of a race happening in the game, because it's one of those things that you have to refer to the rule book during setup to remember. And I love it in games when you don't have to refer to the rule book, when it's all intuitive and when the UI is all there, in the on the on your player mat, on the board, whatever it is. But I do understand that sometimes it is necessary. So sometimes it is the stunted first turns, or maybe player one starts with 5 coins, but player two gets 6 coins, and so on. But it is something I would say in general, I avoid it unless there is a strong race element to the game. So I know that's not a real answer to your question, but I'm saying that in general, I try to design the game around not needing that, or unless it's absolutely necessary, I don't use it. Or I just say at the end of the game, players continue to take turns until everyone has an even number of turns. Yeah. And also keep in mind that first player is not always an advantage. Sometimes there is more of an advantage to other players because they have more information, more choices. Sometimes there's types of interactions in the game where it can actually be an advantage to not be the first player. I'll answer a few more questions, then I'll jump back over to my random topics. Chris says that he went out for a slice of pizza yesterday and some gelato. Love some gelato, and he's supporting some local restaurants, which is awesome. The rest, I'll name the restaurants since he mentions them here: Potato Skin Pizza, Italian Pizza, and Street Corn Pizza. So good. I think those are maybe what he bought, and not the name of the restaurants. What is your favorite style of pizza other than the normal everyday pizza? I love Neapolitan style pizza. So much so that I would love someday just to go to Naples and eat pizza for a few days. I really, really love that thin crust, that almost sweet sauce, the goopy mozzarella cheese. That is my favorite. I absolutely love it. And the way it's cooked in the, I believe, a stone oven. Awesome. Or clay oven, maybe. I'll answer one more question and then I'll show you some cool stuff that I have on the table next to me right here. Cody says, how far ahead do I keep on videos, like blog posts, favorite mechanism videos, and Sunday sit-down videos? My pattern changes from time to time. For blog posts, I almost always write them on the day of. Almost always, and day of, and then I post right away. For videos, my current pattern is that I film three videos, two or three videos, usually three, on Tuesday. I film my Sunday sit-down video on Tuesday, and then I film usually two favorite mechanism videos on Tuesday. One for either that day and the next Friday, or for the Friday and the next day, depending on how far ahead I am. But that gives because these days I send the video to Joe first, the Sunday sit-down video, I send it to Joe so that he can add in images and kind of lists on the screen. He can edit it a little bit before I post it on Sunday. So we need some extra time in there before he does that. And I try to be considerate. My girlfriend Megan works at home here too, so I try to be considerate of her with those videos and her schedule so that I am not recording these videos and talking very loudly while she is trying to work. So sometimes I'll time it so she's taking a little short, very short break while I'm doing the videos. I'll show you some fun things real quick. One, I think I forgot to show this, and maybe if I have, if not, well, basically it is a board that MeepleSource made, and they sent me a few copies of it. So MeepleSource made this big, you can see how big this is. This is huge. This is my face. This is how big this board is. This is a goal board that MeepleSource made for Wingspan. Just so there's a ton of room on it. I'm fine with like the little board that we put in the Wingspan game. But if you have the table space, this is just a really beautiful board. It has wrapped edges. It has both sides of the board. So they printed both sides of the board. This is an officially licensed product because this is something that replaces a true gameplay component in the game, a printed gameplay component. Usually with accessories, we just say, make whatever you want. But for something like this, that actually is really part of the printed game, we made it an officially licensed thing that we partner with MeepleSource to make. But they handled the art, the graphic design, all that stuff. Although I think the art might be, I think the birds here are birds that were previously illustrated, and I think the artists combined them into this nice scene. But really, really nice little goal board here. Also, I wanted to celebrate again. I know I talked a lot about pie in the sky, but I wanted to celebrate it a little bit today and highlight it because this Friday, June 19th, is the retail release date. So if you've been waiting to get this from your local retailer or a retailer that you support and love, they will be allowed to give it to you or ship it to you or let you pick it up this Friday. Yes, I'm excited for those of you who are waiting to play with this with your copy of My Little Scythe. And we still have copies on our website if you want to check it out. It is a wonderful family game designed by Hobie Chow and his daughter. And yeah, I'm just delighted by what Hobie has done with this world. I'll jump over to comments again, and then back to some comments that I have, some things going on at some of our games and in my life. Jim says, oh, so Jim's talking is I'm just Jim has a comment about how they how some friends of his socially distanced but got together. Joe asked for the chocolate of the day. What do I? I'll give it to the chocolate shake that I had yesterday from Chicken Out. It really was a delicious chocolate shake that I had there. But today I'll probably be eating some chocolate almonds after this. And yeah, that'll probably be it. There's really just one chocolate of the day, let's be honest. There's usually multiple chocolates of the day. Mackenzie says that she's looking forward to the dice that you designed for the Gatekeeper Games campaign. Yes. Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute. I don't even know how much I'm supposed to say here, how much I'm allowed to say. But a couple different things here. So I wanted to talk about Kickstarter today because I have found myself backing a lot of Kickstarter projects recently because they look awesome, or I know the creator, or some combination of the two. And usually, if I know the creator, it also looks awesome. So one of the projects that I backed was a set of dice, a set of mystery dice from Gatekeeper Games. John Rott at Gatekeeper Games wrote a we have known him for years, industry friends for years, and he wrote a guest post on Monday that you can check out on the Stonemaier Games blog. But the fun little thing here is that he has some guest designers, and I think this is mentioned on the project page. I'm gonna pull up on my second screen over here some of the projects I backed. I'll talk about those in a second. But he has some guest designers who are kind of designing dice for this mystery box, and I decided to chip in. Basically, we just sent some colors to John. John's doing all the hard work, but he said, "What are some colors that you would like mixed up into some dice, and how do you maybe want to see them used?" And for me, Rolling Realms. Rolling Realms is this this roll and write game that I designed and released for free a couple months ago. And so I designed some dice that have some Stonemaier colors that are mixed into the dice for people to use while playing Rolling Realms. So yeah, that's my contribution there. And I won't spoil like exactly what it looks like. I think John will do that later, or maybe it's in the mystery box. But I did want to talk briefly about all these amazing Kickstarter campaigns I've been backing, because there are some really, really good ones here, some really interesting ones. So one that just finished was Kemet, Blood and Sand. I love Kemet. Kemet was a huge inspiration for Scythe. That one just ended, but I am really excited about that one. I'll go through the other ones pretty quickly. Because I think right now, like I think more than I have in maybe over a year, I have more concurrently backed projects. One is the Emerald Flame, a narrative puzzle adventure. Looks awesome, kind of like a mystery puzzle box. I know, I think I'll have a lot of fun with Megan doing that one. City Builder Ancient World, that's from Connor at Inside Up Games. Merchants of the Dark Road, this is a beautiful looking game, the same artist as Tapestry, and some game industry friends of mine who often come to the Stonemaier Games Design Day. Wonderful people, highly recommend it. The game looks awesome as well. The Whatnot Cabinet, this is for my other industry friend, Eduardo Barraff at Pencil First Games. I love his games, especially most recently, the 100 Tory. And the Whatnot Cabinet just looks beautiful and unique and kind of a great gateway game to bring people into the hobby. I love having a few of those on my shelf at any given time. I backed Hero, the card game by Wesley Cohn. This is one where I think Wesley has been active on my blog in the past. I don't really know him personally, but I checked out the game and it looked really, really cool. It's Hero, the card game. And just the mechanisms described on the page just looked really elegant and interesting. So I backed that one. And all these are, I think, what I consider a very fair, reasonable price. I backed Overlord. Yeah, this is from the guys from the Boss Monster. I've had the pleasure of talking with them a few times. They made the game Boss Monster. I love the pixelated art and I love tile placement. Looks a little bit like Between Two Cities, but it's not a Between Two game, but it just looks really cool. And I love the theme behind it. I backed Mystery Dice, of course, by Gatekeeper Games, as I mentioned, and then most recently, The Age of Atlantis. This one maybe surprised me the most because I didn't know much about it, but I love the box art. I think this just launched yesterday, Age of Atlantis. Just launched yesterday, and it just looks beautiful. I love, I'll be honest. The thing that stood out the most to me is that they could have tried to charge $80 or $90 for this, and I think other companies probably would have, but I think they charged the right price for it, like the right Kickstarter price for it. They charged $59 for the game, for a really beautiful game. Because, as I talked about recently, your margins on Kickstarter are actually really good. You're selling it direct. You're not having to worry about a distributor cut out of the game. Not that that's something to worry about. It's great to sell games through distribution into retailers. But I posted about this recently. I think I've seen way too many project creators base the cost of the game on Kickstarter on the MSRP instead of working from the ground up from the sunk cost and the manufacturing cost. And this project, I think, did it really well. Like this game, it looks like what will be an $80 or $90 game, but they're charging $59 on Kickstarter. And it's beautiful, it looks awesome. I can't wait to get it. And maybe there's stuff I don't know about it because it hasn't super taken off. It's up to like $96,000, which is a lot of money, but I'm surprised it hasn't done even better. But maybe it's because it launched on the same day as Terraforming Mars. But yeah, Age of Atlantis, really cool, really beautiful art, awesome world building. I'm really looking forward to playing this. Yeah, so lots of Kickstarter stuff back lately. I'll jump back over to comments as again I am rambling right now. Daniel says, last week he asked me about a possible social deduction game from Stonemaier Games, and you mentioned design challenges from a 1 to 5 or 2 to 5 player count and asked for ideas. How about a similar mechanism to Growl or Bristol 1350? He says, you have a semi-hidden hand of cards, and if you reach a certain amount of something, you become a werewolf or get infected, depending on what the game is. So an element within a game where people can secretly change some sort of alignment. Actually, Euphoria has a little bit of that, but it's a very small part of Euphoria. Daniel says, also, someone mentioned Coup is good for two players, and I haven't tried it myself. Yeah, you're right. There actually were some people who chimed in on YouTube as well with some other game suggestions, but Coup, I think, is the epitome of a game that you could play with two players. I don't know if I'd really want to play Coup with two players, but maybe Megan and I should try it to see if we enjoy it. But yeah, I think you brought up a great example here of the company that makes Bristol 1350. They make these small box games that look like books and that scale up really well. I haven't ever played one, so I don't know how well they actually scale down the two players, but that sort of format I think could work well. Or whatever they're doing, it works well for it. Sony says, how is your city? Is there destruction there or is it peaceful? Yeah, Sony, my perception of St. Louis and really most of America is that 99.99% of the protests have been peaceful. At some of those peaceful protests, police have provoked the peaceful protesters completely unnecessarily. And in a very small percentage, really separate from the peaceful protests, there's been some opportunistic looting and destruction. I think that is the vast minority. And I think it's too bad a little bit that I think the media maybe shines the light on those looters opposed to the hundreds of thousands of people who are peaceful protesting something that needs to change. Yeah, so I appreciate you asking about that. St. Louis, from my perspective, seems fine from that and has had a number of great peaceful protests. I do want to segue into that a little bit, Sonia, because we issued our Black Lives Matter statement from Stonemaier Games last Thursday, I believe. We took a little time to, I don't want to say we're taking a, took a little time to get it right, because I think it is possible for other companies to get it right faster than we did. But we spent a lot of time figuring out what we wanted to say about it and say it in a way that wasn't just about this moment right now, but was also about making a significant, positive, and lasting impact on Black, Indigenous, and people of color. In the US and around the world, global. And so I don't know if you all have seen the statement. It's on our website right now, Stonemaier Games. It's one of the recent blog posts. It's also on this Facebook page. But it is a very detailed statement about what we are doing specifically to uplift Black, Indigenous, and people of color. BIPOC is the acronym there. And I spent a lot of time last weekend working on it. And I found that I'll. It's an interesting turn or pivot a little bit because Stonemaier Games has always been very inclusive and I feel fairly generous. We have donated a significant amount of charity. A lot of what I do is writing blog posts to help creators. I welcome anyone to those blog posts and those comments. I film a lot of game design videos to where I talk about other games from other publishers, trying to lift them up and share with other designers some cool mechanisms that they can work on. Everyone is welcome there. So, but I've kind of taken a passive approach to this inclusivity. Saying everyone is welcome is great and being inclusive is great, but I think there's something powerful that I'm learning about actively reaching out to people who may have been marginalized or overlooked and saying, how can I help you? How can I lift you up? How can I do more for you so that you can feel welcome in this community and this industry? And I'm just getting a taste of that now. Spent a lot of time on it over the weekend, and I've spent time on it every day this week, actively reaching out to Black, Indigenous, I'll say BIPOC. I don't love the acronym, but BIPOC people in the industry, reviewers, people who want to attend conventions, playtesters, proofreaders, designers, organizations that want to contribute games, our games to at-risk youth, and just not just at-risk youth, but all types of youth, people who can't get their hands on our games. Anyway, I'm rambling again, but I just want to say that it's been really gratifying to do that, to be more active instead of passive in our inclusivity. Yeah, I feel like I'm rambling a lot today. So I'll just answer questions for a while. Chad says he played Tang Garden with his wife the other day and she loved it. If someone had pitched Tang Garden to Stonemaier Games, would you have picked it up? I don't know because it's so solidly a four-player game. I don't know if it would scale up to five, but maybe. If it could scale up to five, maybe. Yeah. It is a really cool game. I really do like the mechanisms in it. The one thing maybe that holds it back a little bit is the sense of progression. There isn't really much of a sense of progression for each player. You do have the tracks that you're moving forward on, but you're not really getting better at anything during the game. That would hold it back, but I bet we could have added something like that to the game. It's not a knock on the game at all. I have had a lot of fun with Tang Garden so far. Jason said, "Did you ever have a? How did I not see that moment when playtesting with other people? Oh yeah, all the time. That's why I playtest. It's more the moments that when after the game is released and someone says something and I'm like, oh, how did I not see that? Now that the game is out there, that has happened too. I can't think of anything specifically right now, but that has definitely happened. And that's when it's more like, how did I not see that during playtesting when that may or may not have been happening?" Connor mentions that his son Caleb had a Scythe review that he was pretty animated about. Yeah, Connor, feel free to link that video in the comments here. I saw that yesterday and it was great. Zach says, "Was it your first time with Star Realms? How do you like it? It's my favorite deck builder." No, it's not my first time. Megan and I played Star Realms a lot. I've played online a little bit and I really enjoy it. However, I have to say that I think I do like Shards of Infinity even more. I really love Shards of Infinity, especially cooperatively, but competitively, it's also a little notch above Star Realms for me. But I do still really enjoy Star Realms too. Suzanne says, "Have I seen the Kickstarter Alice is Missing, a silent RPG game? Looks amazing. Communication through text in the game." That is one that I'm currently following. It's one that I don't actually know if I'd play, but I love the concept behind it. Really, really cool. The idea of playing an RPG with friends through text. Also, holding me back a little bit is that I don't love the text. I don't like having conversations over text. Text to me is purely like a confirmation mechanism. Like, hey, you still coming over at five? That type of thing. So, just for that reason, I don't know, but I love the idea behind it. I love that it's doing well on Kickstarter. I'll read Dylan's comment because he. Oh no, just went by. Okay, so Facebook's doing the thing where it's gonna scroll past comments. Let me do some quick questions. If I miss any questions, feel free to repost them. Jer says, "I know you've mentioned before that you're not particularly fond of solitaire, but have you played any? Am I willing to try it in the future?" I've played Viticulture Altama, but I just prefer to play with people. Just my personal preference. But I do enjoy. I can appreciate why people enjoy the puzzle of solo gaming. Michael says, "I'm gonna do this real quick because I am Facebook is making me miss these questions." Michael says, "You may have nope." Scroll by. Michael, can you repost your question? I'm sorry, Facebook. In fact, I'm going to scroll down a little bit. I know I'm going to miss some questions here, but I'm going to scroll down to Levy's comment. And if you were above Levy, posted about 13 minutes ago, please repost your comment because Facebook is making me miss them right now. He says, "I was wondering if you would publish a game heavier than Scythe." Probably not. No, I think Scythe is probably the heaviest that we'd go. Rod says, "How do I recommend handling blind playtests? Specifically, what do I recommend to do to print low-cost prototypes? Do you recommend a print-and-play version specifically for this purpose?" I do, yeah. I send blind playtesters the digital files, and they print them however they want. The only exception to that was for Charterstone, because Charterstone had a lot of secrets. I think if players were assembling it, it would take away from their secrets. But it was very expensive to do that. It's much better, I think, much easier. For everyone to just to cobble together some co components and print out the cards on their own at home. And I look for playtesters who are willing to do that. Oh, Cynthia's here. Cynthia's talking about the new board. She says, We had an Italian Anna illustrate new birds for the Guild board. Okay, so these are not birds in the game. I think I recognize the swan, but must be a different illustration of the swan there. And I think that's a kingfisher. Oh, here she says, blue jay, scissor-tailed flycatcher, mute swan, and kingfisher, but in new poses. And she says the blue side features bird varieties from the expansion, and the green side features bird varieties in the original game. Oh, I wonder if I just have mine looks the same on both sides, but maybe I'm missing something there. Maybe I just haven't opened it. Yeah, I'll open it and find out. Mitch says, do you have your tester sign a non-disclosure or something to that effect? No, I don't really like NDAs, but I do put the clear expectation out there that our playtesters do not play in public and that they keep what they do private. So let's see. Oh, here we go. Here's what threw me off. So there's a kind of a cover sheet here. Remove that. There you go. That's really beautiful. I hadn't even seen that. That's just a tail flycatcher and a bluebird down here. That's really beautiful. I usually play on the green side because there's a little more player interaction there. Again, I missed some questions here, but I'm going to scroll down. And so Francisco says, am I the only one that really wants to play my little side but can't justify the purchase because I'm no, not a kid and have no kids yet? I think some people do feel that way, that it is a kid's game, but I see it more as a family game and a gateway game, really. It's a kind of a gateway into Scythe and much shorter. You can play this game in 30, 45 minutes. Sergio says, when exactly in July will you reveal the details for Codename Sand? I honestly actually don't know. It will either be July 1st or July 8th, but I have not decided what I'm going to do there. There's pros and cons for both. I would love to do it on July 1st, but I do also like keeping a somewhat tight gap between the announcement and the pre-order, and the pre-order will be in early August. So I don't know, maybe I'm leaning slightly towards July 8th, but it could be July 1st. We'll see. Ricardo says, have I tried the King's Dilemma? And I have not, but I really, really want to. I need to finish my. I think I need to get back to the point where I can meet with friends, because right now it's just I can only play games with Megan. But in the future, when we finish our Charterstone campaign, after we get together with friends again, I think that'll be the next legacy game that I play. Although Sleeping Gods might be out by then. Whenever the Kickstarter for Sleeping Gods arrives, I will be playing that for sure. Fernando says, thoughts on Nemesis Lockdown? I haven't backed it yet, but it does look like an awesome game, and I'm glad it's doing well for Awakened Realms. And I have had the chance to talk with that designer a little bit. Really, really great designer. Nice guy. Dominic says, what's my take on Monumental? You know, I was eager that they put it back on Kickstarter because I kind of wanted to back it, but the price threw me off a little bit. I'm intrigued by it. I think it has a very cool action selection mechanism using a grid of cards. The dudes on the map portion of it, the kind of the empire building element of it, I'm not quite as much interested in. It's what I would call like an empire building game that calls itself a civilization game. I designed the civilization game that I want, so I'm happy with Tapestry as like the civilization game that I play. But Monumental does look pretty cool with that action selection system in particular. Sarah says, "Have I watched The Last Kingdom yet?" My husband and I got on that bandwagon and are loving it. I haven't, but it has been recommended in the past, so I need to make sure it's actually on my Netflix list. So I'll do that. I'll make a note about that. The Last Kingdom. We just finished the season two finale for Succession, which was really good. We really enjoyed that. Benjamin says, what do I think about Nemesis? I haven't played Nemesis. I want to, but I haven't played it. Alex says, what is my opinion when you hear that that Tapestry is an overproduced game? Do you think that a cheaper version would have allowed greater access to the game? Do you use price as a means of segmentation? Do you work with various stalemate scenarios before deciding on one type of production or another? I consider a lot of different factors when I decide what I want to put into a game. The number one decision for Tapestry is I knew that I was only going to make in my life and release one civilization game. And I didn't want it to be flat. I didn't want a bunch of tiles sitting on board. I wanted it to feel magnificent. I wanted you to feel like, wow, I built this thing. I built this beautiful thing. Not that tiles aren't beautiful, but I think the miniatures, the elevation of the miniatures, really elevate the game. I think they enhance the game. So that was my vision for the game, and I worked around that vision so that we could bring it to life at what I think is a, I mean, $99 is a lot. No getting around that. But I think you're getting a lot for that money. You're getting a lot. So I had a vision for the game that I wanted to pursue, and that I thought would be the most exciting version of the game for people. One thing we might explore in the future, not for Tapestry, but for other games, is releasing a standard version and a deluxe version that we sell directly. Retailers don't love that because retailers want to sell both versions of the game or the best version of the game, but the margins are just a lot tougher on the deluxe version of the game. So that's something that we will test out on a game next year to see how it works out. Not Tapestry, different game. Mario asked, "Who is the artist of the new game?" I haven't mentioned that yet, so I will talk about that soon. But if you are on Instagram, you can see that I've now spoiled two images from our new game. David says, "Do I play PS4 games?" He says, "No, I don't. I play games on. Well, I rarely play any digital games at all. But I have an Oculus Quest that I play a few games on, and I play a few games on my computer." Mario says, "Do I have any tips on what we are going to find in the Tapestry expansion?" I do not know, but I will look forward to talking about that later this summer. Thank you all for repeating these questions. I'm not intentionally ignoring any questions, just Facebook kind of scrolled past a bunch of them. Travis says, "I know you say almost weekly that I'm not going to make more expansions for Scythe. My question is, do you have a reason for that?" Yes, yeah, the reason is that we had a story that we wanted to tell with Scythe, and we didn't want to drag it out. Like, I feel like there are like TV shows and some games too, where you kind of just drag things out forever. People have spent hundreds of dollars on Scythe, and I wanted to respect the fact that we've kind of finished a story here. And I think there is the chance of other games, completely different games, in the Scythe universe. But that's the reason that we're not going to make more Scythe expansions. David says, "What are my thoughts?" Another, no, I think it's different, David. No, that's Travis. This is David. "What are my thoughts on the expansion for Castles of Mad King Ludwig? Is it a must own?" I was happy and excited to get the expansion when I played it a couple years ago, but I have since only played with the base game. I just love the base game so much. I think there's so much replayability in the base game itself that I would not say it's necessary. No. Patrick says, "Do I think the Norwegians expansion is a must for Feast for Odin?" Lots of expansion talk here today. I don't think it's a must, but I think it's fun. It's more stuff, which I think works well for an expansion. Miko also wanted my thoughts on Nemesis, but I haven't played Nemesis yet. I want to. Chad says, "Do I like Carcassonne? If so, what is my favorite version of it?" I have played Carcassonne. I don't think I played with many of the expansions, so I really do enjoy the core game. I played it probably the most on my iPad, because I think they have a really, really good version of it there. Sven said, "What's the next game? A Viking game?" I am slowly revealing details about what the new game is, but currently I'm just hinting at it. So if you go to Instagram at Jamie Stigmeyer, you can see a few hints at what it will be. Sonia says, "Have I checked out The Rise of Phoenixes on Netflix yet?" I've watched a little bit, Sonia, but I haven't gone deep into it yet. Tiago says, "Am I planning on releasing another game for younger kids like My Little Scythe?" Again, I consider My Little Scythe a family game, but not necessarily a game for little kids. I think it's a good game, a good gateway game, a good family game. And really, for all of our games, I do try to make them inviting for people of all ages. I think this is the art style in this is particularly inviting for kids. Do we have any other games like that coming up? Currently, we don't have any like that with such an inviting art style for kids in the works. But there is one. There is one. Actually, no, there is one. I wouldn't say it's for kids in particular. It's a really beautiful art style, but I think it will be inviting for everyone. Okay, let's see. Tim says, "Judging from viticulture, are you a wine connoisseur? If so, how do you rate or like Missouri wine?" I actually am not a big wine drinker. I know that's terrible to say as the designer of viticulture, but wine gives me headaches usually when I drink it. So I love the idea of wine. I love the way that people talk about wine, but I rarely drink it myself. I rarely drink much alcohol at all, honestly. But I do. I mean, when I drink, I love a good hard cider if I'm gonna have something to drink usually. Michael says, tips on where I should start research when learning how to balance a game. When learning how to balance a game, that's interesting. Because I do have a page on our website about how to design a tabletop game. There might be an article there about balance. But for me, I mean, balance is all about playtesting, gathering data and playtesting and analyzing that data from a few different perspectives and angles until it's as balanced as possible. But can't think of any resources offhand about that. Gerald says, have I tried Res Arcana? It's incredible how much it does with so little. I have not. It's on my wish list, but I have not played it yet. Let me see if it's back in stock yet, though. I would love to try that. A lot of people have recommended it. Bree says, have I played Monster Train? It's a new PC game that shares a lot of elements with Slay the Spire. I have heard that. I was also told that I should play through Slay the Spire before playing Monster Train, and I'm still definitely working my way through Slay the Spire. I have a lot left to play there. I've only put like maybe 5 or 6 hours into it at this point, which is a lot for me for a video game. Michael says, Michael has a question about balancing. Let's see. Ivan says, recently I've seen a digital version of Viticulture. Yes, the digital version of Viticulture, did it come out last week or the week before? Very recently, the digital version of Viticulture is out there now. He says there's a digital version of Scythe and Between Two Castles and Charterstone, a lot of our games now. Is this something that could happen for more of your games in the near future? Yeah, we have almost all of our games in the works for a full AI digital versions. Yeah, Wingspan's coming up. My Little Scythe is with someone. Yeah, I actually need to check on that one. See how that one's coming along. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that. Josh says, do I enjoy any GMT games? I think the only GMT game I've played is Twilight Struggle. And I have to say that I really enjoy Watergate more. I don't think Watergate is a GMT game. But it's inspired by it. Sam says, quick question. When designing a game, do you have a general outline you can recommend for the creative process? I'm looking to possibly create a game myself, and I'd be fascinated to hear your perspective on the matter. I actually do, and it's in video form. Cody, you're always good at linking things. So if you can, actually, Sam, you can also look it up on YouTube. It's 10 Steps to Design a Tabletop Game. I think that's the video. It's also on the Stonebar Games website. If you pull up the Stonebar Games website and go to Kickstarter, it's under the Kickstarter header, and the last thing on that menu is how to design a tabletop game. There's a video there, actually, that will give you talk about the design process. Yeah. George says there's an interesting choose your own path game on Kickstarter called Elia and something shiny, E-I-L-A. It seems to be a kid's game, but apparently it's highly strategic and remembers your decisions. Have you seen it? I have not, but I'm going to check it out right after this because that sounds awesome. Sounds right up my alley. Gerald says, do I have a system to balancing my design time, excluding designing in my head and business duties? I'd imagine business duties could take over all of your time if you let it. And yes, that often happens. I wish I had a more firm system. I kind of did before I started dating and living with Megan, but now I like to have evenings for Megan. So previously in the past, I would do certain things in the morning, certain things in the afternoon, and sometimes have some time for game development in the afternoon, like game and expansion development. And then my evenings, I usually had 2 to 3 hours in the evenings that were only for design time. I would not do business stuff during that time. But now it's shifted a little bit, and it's less delineated. So I have basically just mornings and afternoons up until dinner. So sometimes I have a little bit of time at night, but it's such a small amount of time that I'm hesitant to dive deep into a design. I usually like to have at least an hour for design time if I'm going to dive into it. So no, currently I don't have a great system for it. Dancia says, what's my favorite mechanism to work with when designing a game? Is it also your favorite mechanism to play with? I have a couple different favorite mechanisms that I really love. I love Push Your Luck. I love I Cut, You Choose. I love worker placement. I love engine building. So I've worked with many of these in many of my games, but there are a few on that list. Like Press Your Luck is in Tapestry in one little faction, but it's barely there. So I'd love to work with that a little bit more. And I'd love to work with I Cut, You Choose. I haven't done much with that at all at this point yet. So But those I do des often design games with those mechanisms that I love, and I do gravitate towards them in the games that I get to my table. Eric says, with the upcoming release of the Scythe Complete Rulebook, which brings everything under one roof, would it be possible to gather everyone who contributed to the design of Scythe and have Dusty host a conversation on the mill? I love that idea, Eric. That would be, if Dusty's up for it, yeah, that sounds fantastic. Or I could do it on my channel. It is tough to get some of these people together. Hobie's in Canada on, and Hobie and Kai, Ryan, I think, are in the same time zone. I'm in the middle of the US. Jakob's in Poland. Kai is in Germany. Dusty, I think, is in Michigan. So it's all over the place, but maybe someday. Could be cool. Sherry says that she loves Stonemaier games. Thank you, Sherry. She says, we love Wingspan Scythe and just got Tapestry. What would I recommend next? Viticulture or Euphoria? I mean, I think Viticulture is more highly acclaimed than Euphoria. And there is more, based on the games that you mentioned, I would say Viticulture would be the next. And I think Euphoria is a nice step after Viticulture. But it also depends on playing time. Euphoria plays faster than Viticulture. So if you like that kind of 60 to 75 minute sweet spot, Euphoria works really well for that. Not the first play, but the second, third, and subsequent plays are play a little faster. Wim says, did I find time to fix the Rolling Realms printing issue with the missing coins, or maybe I can help with that? Wim, yeah, I don't think there's, I think if you download the PDF, I don't think there's actually an issue with it. If you open it and download the PDF and open it in Acrobat, I have not, I've never experienced an issue with it. But I guess other people could. I did read something about that if it's something, some setting that I need to change in InDesign, just send me an email and I'd be happy to take a look at it and change that setting in InDesign. Let me mention a few games that I've been playing recently, real quick. Megan and I played a game of Viticulture with Tuscany. We used the structure side of the board. We played that over the weekend. We played Potion Explosion on Board Game Arena and Terra Mystica on Board Game Arena and Seven Wonders. I mentioned that we played Star Realms the other day. Oh, I did want to celebrate. I was really happy to hear about the Supreme Court decision the other day that says that our LGBTQ people have the same right to not be fired due to their sexual identity under the Civil Rights Act of I believe it's Article maybe 7. That was a ruling that came down on Monday. I was elated to hear that. Long overdue, but I'm glad to hear that. What else? Oh, this weekend, the Sunday sit-down video was about Shannon's favorite games. Shannon is our project manager at Panda, the manufacturing company that I work with. And he works so closely with Stonemaier Games that I thought it would be cool to feature his favorite games on the top 10 list. And that's what I did this past week. Morton's favorite games will be this week. Morton is the guy that Morton was the first hire for Stonemaier Games after myself and Alan. And Morton lives in Denmark and he does the solo versions of our games. So he has a lot of games. Solo games that he talks about on his list that I haven't even ever played solo. So if you love solo games, keep an eye out for this week's Sunday sit-down video. I also did a photo shoot for our new game, the new game that codenamed Sand, that we will be talking about in detail in early July. I did the photo shoot for it the other day for the one of the first copies of it. So that was fun to do a photo shoot of a new game. And oh yeah, we also finished Wingspan Oceania. So the Wingspan expansion for this year, we finished it. It is now in production. That does not mean that it'll be ready tomorrow. Production takes months, and then we have freight shipping and all that. So it's going to be quite some time. But I wanted to update you and say that we did finish with all the files for the game, all the proofreading, all the design, all that stuff is done, and the printer now has it and is moving forward with it. I also did recent videos, game design videos about Bonanza and Six Nymphed. And I think that's all the things on my list. So I'll focus the rest of this chat on questions here. Rod says, how is Jakob's 1920 plus world related to Scythe and your work? Is Iron Harvest related to Scythe in any way? If so, what are your expectations of the game? So Rod, the very brief story behind the 1920 plus world is that Jakob, I don't know exactly when he started to think of it, but I believe it was the summer of 2014 that he started illustrating it. He illustrated maybe five or six, maybe 10 illustrations in that world. And I stumbled upon those illustrations, reached out to Jakob and said, hey, I want to design a tabletop game in this world. This is a beautiful world. And so I got the tabletop rights to the 1920 plus world, and we called them a game called Scythe. That's what we called Scythe. And so Scythe, and then from there we kind of built the world together. It's definitely Jakob's world, but we built it kind of around Scythe. Like Scythe was the impetus to illustrate a ton of different things that happened in that world, all the different factions, the mechs, all that stuff. Most of it grew from that collaborative process. Some of it was already in Jakob's head, of course. A lot of it was in Jakob's head. Iron Harvest is a completely different game. So Jakob sold the rights to the video game, a video game in the 1920 plus world, to King Arts Games, or King Arts, and they created a game called Iron Harvest, which is a video game completely unrelated to Scythe, the tabletop game, but set in the same 1920 plus world. I know very little about Iron Harvest. I know as much as you know, because it's a completely separate company, completely different rights. But I am excited about it. I'm curious about it. Jason says, besides Scotland Yard, are there any other classic mass market games that you recommend for families? I don't know if it goes quite far back, as far back as Scotland Yard, but Stone Age I think is excellent. What else did we play as a kid? We played Millborn a lot as a family when I was kid, as a kid. So I think that maybe that holds up. I haven't played that in years. And if it's a family, if you have a family of four, I think Hearts and Spades work quite well as well. What else? Any other classic games? I think Downforce. I mean, Downforce is a classic game that I didn't know anything about until Restoration Games restored it, and I think that is an excellent family weight game, and it scales so well up to six players. Ricardo says, "What do I think of the idea that the name of the illustrator should be the same size and prominence on board game boxes?" I don't know about the same size. That's not a judgment there, but the game exists because of the designer and the publisher. And the art exists because the publisher paid the artist to make the art. But I definitely think the artist's name should be on the box. It's something that I overlooked for a little while, but I think at this point all artist names are right on the box covers of our games. And for many of our games, I think the names are the same size, just because it looks better in terms of font size. Shadi says, "What do I play on Oculus Quest? I've been enjoying Tetris Effect lately." I haven't actually played any strategy games on Oculus Quest. I use it more as an exercise machine. We play Supernatural, we play Beat Saber, and we play Box VR. Yeah. Patrick says, "Do I think the nor oh Patrick's repeating the question here. Patrick, I answered that one earlier." Melissa says, "Is the new game the one that's inspired by Breath of the Wild?" How can I answer that? Because I'm not talking about the new game yet, but I do want to say, I guess I should say, I am still actively designing the game that is inspired by Breath of the Wild. So if I'm actively designing the game, obviously it's not the game that will come out in a few months. So. The Breath of the Wild game is a massive game. It's not a Breath of the Wild game. It's a Breath of the Wild inspired game of exploration, of cooperation, and that game is a different game that you don't know the code name for, and it will, I don't even know when it will be released yet, but that is a game that I'm currently actively designing, and it is not the game that will be coming out soon. I'm not even the designer of the game that's coming out soon. Sarah says, "I know you aren't big into combat games. I'm definitely a non-confrontational gamer. However, have you tried High Heavens? It's a great game, especially if you are into Greek and Norse mythology. The ring system where you can see your health increase or decrease is a very neat game mechanism." I have not, but everything you described there sounds really cool, so I'll make a note of that about that. You know, one bittersweet thing, Geekway to the West is my favorite game convention. It's a game convention here in St. Louis where it's one of these conventions where you just get together and play games for 4 days. And Geekway for years has been a great way for me to play a bunch of new to me games, play with a bunch of different random people and learn from those games. And this is sounds like the type of game that I would put on that list, because I don't always, when I hear about a game, I don't always just go buy it right away. I often save it for Geekway so I can play it there and see if I actually like it. And Geekway was supposed to be this past weekend. It was canceled this year because of the coronavirus. But it's bittersweet because I hear about a game like this, I'm like, oh, that goes on my Geekway list, but I have to wait a full year now before I get to Geekway. So I may just have to buy it and give it a try. Let's see. Jared says, "I love the idea about Scythe being a finished story. I feel the same about movies and TV shows. If there are any spin-offs, I would be interested, but it has to be standalone too." Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't love the concept of like I don't even love the concept of a standalone expansion because it's kind of contradictory. Like, if it's a standalone expansion, that means it's a game that happens to have some stuff that overlaps with some other game. So I don't put the expansion label on that. And if I do end up publishing another completely different game from Scythe in the 1920 plus universe, it will be completely different. Like, it will not have, it probably won't even have any components that correlate with Scythe. You might see some familiar characters there, but no components or gameplay elements. Completely different game. Cody says, is there a page or blog post where we can see the past charity auctions that Stonemaier Games has hosted? Yes. And I'd love for you to check that out because they're also, you can not only see the charities that we've supported, but you can also see the bloggers and content creators that we've supported through that charity auction. I don't know if anyone's posted it, so I will just look it up and post it in the comments here, Cody. It is under, yeah. Okay, I'll post it here if you see a weird link because it. Oh, I'm gonna miss a lot of stuff as I scroll down. Someone might have already posted it. Somebody already posted? Nope. Okay, I'll post it here, right at the bottom of the comments there. Now I'll scroll back up and try to find that question. I have a lot of questions to get to today. Hopefully, I can make it in time. Patrick says, "How does it feel to play your own game? I always thought that if you play your own game, you are God level good at it." That isn't the case for me because I like to experiment when I play games, even if they're my games. So I do enjoy playing my own games as long as I'm not dragging anyone into them. I like when other people suggest, hey, can we play this? And then I'm absolutely in. I love to play. I design games that I love to play. So if someone else wants to play my games with me, I'm happy to do so. And I often play pretty well, but I would say maybe I win 50% of the time when I play my own games, maybe even less. Beth says, hello from Anchorage. It would be really awesome if you came out with an Alaska-themed game with gold, oil, moose, and bears. Yeah, that would be fun. I think I've played gold, pay dirt. I think pay dirt maybe is based in Alaska. But it doesn't have moose, doesn't have bears. And check out Parks, too. Parks does have, I believe, at least one. It does have Denali in it. So Parks does have a little bit of that in there. Donnie says, not including Stonemaier Games, what's currently your favorite worker placement game? I think I still have to go with Sulcan. I love Sulcan so much. Yeah, I think I'd put that at the top of the list. That's definitely a heavier worker placement game, but I do really love it. Tom says, what are my thoughts on using apps in games? Will Stonemaier Games use an app in the future? I applaud innovation in any form in games, and I think sometimes an app can really elevate a game. It's not something that I think Stonemaier Games will pursue because of how long and how often past the schedule it can take to get the digital version of anything right, any digital app right, can take a lot longer and a lot less, it's a lot less predictable, I think, than the development time for a tabletop game. So I don't think I wouldn't want to have like a tabletop game where everything is 100% done, except we're waiting on an app developer that we have no control over who's a year behind schedule. So I wouldn't want to do that. James says, given how beloved games such as Scythe and Wingspan are, do you get much of a chance to play them often? Or at this point, are you sick of them? No, I don't actually get that much of a chance to play them. I play a lot of new to me games, and I do play some favorites. Often, I mean, these days it's almost all two player or digital online. So it isn't all that often that I get to play my own games. Oh, actually, so Cody posted a link to 10 Steps to Design a Board Game. Although, Cody, that is an older link. There's a newer video, much newer, about 10 Steps to Design a Board Game that you can see. I think it's hopefully in the description of this older video. Brad says, how does an unpublished game designer go about pitching to someone like you in the industry? I'm not asking for a pitch session, but would like to go about this professionally when my design is ready. So Brad, I think it depends on the publisher. It depends on every publisher. So pick the publishers that you're really passionate about that you think would be a great fit for the game. Find their submission guidelines on their website. Read through them. Make sure your game is actually a good fit for them, and that they are actively accepting submissions. And just follow their instructions. Every publisher has different instructions for that, as do we. Chad mentions happy 1 year anniversary. And yes, Megan and I celebrated our 1 year dating anniversary just last week. George says, any thoughts on language independent games? He says he's rarely had some success with my family on games except Codename Pictures and Spot It and Ticket to Ride in my family genre. Yeah, so language independence is tough. For me, it's when something can easily be explained with an icon, I'm happy to do it. But I think an overwhelming number of icons in a game can be overwhelming, can be too much. Even in Seven Wonders. Have you ever played Seven Wonders with the Leaders expansion? I love that expansion, but we are constantly looking through the rule book to figure out what all those icons mean when they could have just included a little line of text. So my preference is when you have a lot of icons that you include the icons and the text, especially if it's on cards. There's also the method that we use in Tapestry. In Tapestry, we repeat a lot of the icons. There's a fair number of icons on the board, but we repeat a lot of those icons, and they are referenced on reference guides. So you can have these reference guides that you can pass around the table in any language, so that you can know what all the different icons mean. So I think my general thought is, if it works for a game to be language independent, go for it. But a lot of games would be hindered by it. Take Wingspan, for example. If we tried to communicate all that stuff on Wingspan and icons, not only would it mean that we'd have to simplify the birds so much that they just wouldn't be as interesting or thematic, but we'd also have to require players to constantly refer to reference guides, which would be really annoying. So I think it really just depends on the game. Xiang is joining us from Down Under from Australia. He says he's just lurking, no questions. Good to have you here today. One of the people that I've been emailing with recently. Rachel says, have you played Star Wars Rebellion or War of the Ring? What story or movie would you like to see turn into a tabletop game in the future? I'd love to see from a movie. Actually, I love the book more, but I love Ready Player One. I love the book Ready Player One. I'd love to see that in a tabletop form. And I need to play. I do love Back to the Future, and I heard there is a new Back to the Future game, so I need to give that a try. I have played Star Wars Rebellion maybe three times. I haven't played War of the Ring. Ashley says, have I done snorkeling before? I have not. I need to do that, but I've never done that. Zach says, if Stonemaier Games was making the money to do so, is there any part of the business you'd like to hire someone else to do so you could focus that time on something else? Yes, there's actually a number of things that I kind of compiled up over the years, and that's why I hired Joe. So Joe is our first full-time hire. He started in early January this year. And so Joe has taken some things that I didn't really love about my job or that I wasn't really even very good at, and he is handling them for me now. I'm still part of the process. Like he's our director of communications. I am still very much communicating with people as well as part of my job. But Joe has taken a lot off my plate and allowed me to have a little extra time to focus on design, although there are plenty of days where I am just filled doing operations stuff. Natalia is here, artist from Wingspan. Natalia, I was showing your work today on the MeepleSource mat. She says, what is your all-time favorite game? Currently, the game that I put at the top of that list is Clank. I really, really, really love Clank. Team Hotep says, is there a game that you've always wanted to get or play but haven't been able to get due to it being out of print? I don't know if I would say always. Games have come and gone and come back into print. But one that I have been wanting to play really badly is Blitzkrieg. Blitzkrieg is a two-player game, tug-of-war game. I really want to play that, but it's been sold out for a while and I haven't seen it come back into stock. So I would love to play that. If any of you are watching this and have a copy of Blitzkrieg that you don't want anymore, I would gladly buy it from you. The other game that I'll say while I'm saying this, if any of you have this game that you would w want to sell, is the Lord of the Rings or Hobbit version of Love Letter. I would love to buy that from someone, but that's completely out of print, so I can't get that one either. Richard says, how to design worker placement games? He says he's never made one. I would say play a lot of worker placement games and start brainstorming ideas to do something innovative and unique. Because a lot of stuff has been done in worker placement already. Take a look at like the Garpil games, Raiders of the North Sea, Architects of the West Kingdom, to see how games are doing it differently. And just study and play a lot of different worker placement games and brainstorm ideas. Mario says, speaking of Garpil games, Shem specifically, have you seen Shelfie Stacker on Kickstarter? I have, yeah, it looks like a cute little dice placement game. Mitch says, have I played Flam Rouge? I have, yeah, I have a video about Flam Rouge. It isn't my favorite racing game, but I do like what they did with it. I think that's a, is that a Matt Leacock game? I think it is. I could have that wrong. Ilya says, how does the distribution of sand look like? Will the pre-orders be only on your website or at some of the friendly local game stores as well? So the way that we do pre-orders is we make the game and then we say, hey, we have this game. We are ready to ship it to you like in the next week or so. You can pre-order directly from us. And in the meantime, we give full information about that game to distributors and retailers. So if they want to accept pre-orders, that's completely up to them. They do have a different retail release date, but retailers are welcome to accept pre-orders on as long as they know that they are getting a certain number of copies of games. I do not want retailers ever selling games that they don't know that they're actually going to get. And so we try to give distributors very specific numbers for how many copies of the game they'll be getting so that they can convey that information to retailers. They don't always do that, but that's how the system should work. Tim has a nice comment here about Euphoria, Tapestry, Viticulture, Scythe. Thank you, Tim. We're at 11, so I'm going to just get through the remaining questions, I think, and then sign off for the day. Chad says, I just played Blockus the other day with non-gamer friends, and it was surprisingly really good. Thoughts on Blockus? I love Blockus, Chad. I have it on my shelf over here. That is actually a classic game that I absolutely love. If you like abstract games, love Blockus. I think that's maybe at the top of my abstract game list or right near the top. Really, really love it. I hope I have a video about it. I know I mentioned it in videos many times, but I don't know if I have a video just about Blockus. I'll make a note of that. Sean says, have I seen Crossing Swords on Hulu? I have not seen Crossing Swords. What do you recommend it? What's that about? Sean also says, do I think that a movie or TV series of Scythe in the future? Do I think there could be one? I don't know if it would be Scythe, but it would be great if there was a 1920 plus a movie or TV series. The rights are completely Jakob's, but I would absolutely support that. I would love to watch it. Shoddy recommends Oculus Quest boxing called Thrill of the Fight. It's a huge workout and a lot of fun and feels realistic to someone who doesn't know boxing like myself. Thrill of the Fight. I'll check that out. Thrill of the Fight. Thank you. Jorah says, are you also going to design games that are maximum 30 minutes? I really like games that I can play very quickly. I would say that My Little Scythe kind of fits into that realm. It can. But the focus of some of our games are event games. So, like, kind of the centerpiece of a game night. And so, 30 minutes is a little bit too short. We're more focused on like 45 to 90 minute games. Okay, Cody found the more recent video about designing a tabletop game for me. Thank you, Cody, for posting that. Few more questions here. Rod says, have I ever played Wasteland Express Delivery Service? What are your thoughts on the overwhelming amount of components? You know, I have played it and I loved how they organized it. I thought that was a great example of having a lot of components and bits and pieces, but organizing it in such a wonderful, elegant way that it didn't seem overwhelming. Xiang says that he's pretty sure he's got a Hobbit love letter sitting around somewhere, but I know, Xiang, from what you've said, that that's not something that I think I could get from you, given your love of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Jeremy says, when making a game based on a book or movie, how close to the source would you make your theme? Would you be tempted to make your own decisions that directly differ from the source? It baffles me that movies like The Last Airbender and Artemis Fowl would diverge so much from the original to the point where they can't continue with the series. Yeah, I can't speak to those specifically. I haven't seen either of those movies. I have seen Avatar, the show, the series. But no, if I was going to make a game based on an IP, I would want it to be entirely welcoming to those who love that IP. No, yeah, I couldn't see myself changing key elements, core elements at all, really. I also don't think that a game design around an IP needs to include everything about the IP. I think you can choose one specific part, go for the heart of that IP, and design a game around that. Like Hobbit the Love Letter. There's so many things about The Hobbit. Love Letter distilled it down to a few characters that interact with each other in a way that feels familiar and Hobbity. Dean says, did I ever consider designing a modular, replayable campaign for Scythe consisting of randomized scenarios using existing content? For gamers who own the base game and the Fenris expansion, the components provide a wonderful possibility for a range of scenarios. And I agree, yeah, we kind of included a page at the end of the Rise of Fenris that outlines all the different modules in it so that you can mix and match for what you want. I like what you're saying here. I would love if a fan did it. I'm not going to do it. But what I love is that someone could figure out Someone could play Scythe, play through those modules, and say, here are my favorites. Here's my favorite combination of Scythe. This is what I want to play. They can pick and choose, and they can play it. So it's not really a scenario, but it's, I like that you have the ability to choose your favorite combination of modules in Scythe. And there are a lot of them at this point. Chandler says, I prefer the triangle block us. Have I tried it? I think I have at one point, but I love the square version. That's the one that works the best for my brain. Oh, Cody even found the video about Blockus, an old video. Okay, I'm gonna cross that off. I have done a video about Blockus. Thanks, Cody. Wesley. Oh, okay. Wesley joined. Wesley, I talked about Wesley's game Hero a few minutes ago when I was talking about Kickstarter. And Wesley, feel free to share the link here to the game in the comments. I think if someone searches on Kickstarter for Hero, they might get a bunch of different games. But Wesley's game Hero is on Kickstarter right now, and very appealing price, beautiful art, really cool mechanisms. I cannot wait to play that with Megan. Tim says, I recommend Black Orchestra if you haven't played it yet. I have played it. I'm pretty sure I have a video about it. But yeah, thank you for recommending it. I have enjoyed, I think, two plays of it. Okay, I had Flamru's designer completely wrong. The designer is Asker Harding Grenerud. What am I thinking of that for Matt Leacock? I thought he did like a bicycle-based race game, because Matt Leacock is all over the place with his games in addition to Pandemic. Must be thinking of a different game there. Corey says, "Do I play filler games and take that games?" I do. Yeah. I have a good shelf of filler games. I think I have a top 10 list about filler games. Cody, I don't know if you're still on here, but if you want, oh, good. Wesley posted the link here. Yeah, I do have. I do play a number of filler games. Yeah, take that games fewer, far fewer. Take that games. Jason says, "Do I donate any of our games to local libraries?" So, Jason, I'm glad you asked that. I volunteered at a library when I was a kid to get some volunteer hours in, and I learned that libraries have budgets. They buy all those books. They aren't donated. They're buying the books. And so, whenever a library approaches me to say, "Can we have some of your games?" My answer has been, "What's your budget for it? Like, how much do you want to spend on it? Let's make this work." And I have kind of a discount that I can offer them to get the games on their shelves. But I'm running a business. They have a budget to spend on things like books and games, and so I think that is a fair exchange. The one exception that I am starting to make is with this effort that we're making for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, is that if there are organizations that specifically target that, maybe we're putting together game libraries to invite BIPOC people to especially kids, to interact with our games, I'm happy to donate to them. I saw a comment on Twitter the other day that someone had said that they had contacted me multiple times in the past, and I completely ignored their requests. And it kind of threw me off, because this was in regards to library donations. I don't remember ever getting a message about a library where I just completely ignored it. Usually my response has been, "What's your budget for it? Let's work with you. Let's make this happen." But I am re revising that a little bit for our BIPOC effort to offer games for donations to libraries that support BIPOC youth in particular. Matt Leacock designed Chariot Race, did it on Kickstarter. Okay, that must be what I'm confusing it with. Andy says, "Do I keep games you really enjoy but never get to the table? If you get rid of them, why? If you keep them, why?" My rule is that if I don't play a game in a year, over the last year, and I don't think I'll get it to the table, well, if I haven't played a game in a year, or if I've played it and I don't think I will get it to the table again in the next year, I give it to someone who will play it. That's my general rule. There have been a few small exceptions where I have kept a game because I want it for research purposes, certain components in it for research. I have kept a few games for that purpose. But even then, I often try to give it to a friend, local friend who really wants it, because then I still have access to the game, but a friend can enjoy it. And I think we just reached the end of the questions. Went a little bit over today, but that's okay. I really appreciate you all for joining me and asking these questions. Cody is always posting the videos. That's awesome. And I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your day, rest of the week, and I will see you next Wednesday for the next chat. Take care. Bye.